Welcome back in, everyone, to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We've got a very special episode in store for you today. Joining us today, we have the General Director of the New York City Opera, Michael Capasso, who's here to talk to us about their Bryant Park Picnic performances happening on various dates through the summer at 7 p.m. at Bryant Park. And you can get more information about this at bryantpark.org/picnics. We are so honored to be having the New York City Opera on our show and to be having its general director with us. So let's go ahead and welcome on our guest, Michael Capasso. Michael, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Oh, thank you very much. It's really fun to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here, and I'm so excited to be talking about this wonderful, well, I guess I should say these wonderful events happening in the summer. So why don't we start by having you tell us a little bit about what these Bryant Park Picnics performances are?
Well, they vary from concerts to fully staged performances. And this summer, we have both. This year, this entire summer's programming is dedicated to Giacomo Puccini, very famous opera composer, of course, of the most popular operas in the repertoire. And it's the 2024 is the 100th anniversary of his passing. So we, along with everybody else, are doing something to celebrate Puccini. And so we open the park season on May 31st with a concert with orchestra, chorus, and soloists, and a program that features an excerpt from every one of his operas, from the first to the last, which is a very exciting and very challenging program, but something I think the audience will really enjoy.
That is amazing. Amazing. What a great celebration. So, I mean, I kind of feel like the obvious answer as to why you picked pieces you pick, you know, you mentioned this. I'm sorry. I missed his birthday. And 100th birthday?
No, 100th death anniversary.
Death anniversary. I'm so sorry. So obviously, you know, the 100th death anniversary of him. But how did you select the particular pieces that you're going to be performing?
Well, in many cases for audience appeal. And, you know, much of what he's written is among the most famous music in the operatic canon. And some of it is not, because, you know, he's really, everybody knows Tosca and La Boheme and Madame Butterfly and Turandot. But he wrote many other operas as well, which are less famous, but nevertheless have equally beautiful music. So, for example, Le Villi, which is his first opera, we chose a moment that features the chorus and the soloists and the orchestra, frankly, because it's a good opening number, you know, I mean, and, you know, there are arias from the from that opera that are very, very beautiful. But, you know, you, in the end, you're still programming for an audience and you want to engage them as quickly as you can, which is why I chose that. And it goes through his canon until we get to Turandot, and we end with the last music he ever wrote before he died. And he left the opera incomplete. And then we go back and we stop there and we pay and we acknowledge that this is the last music he ever wrote. And then we return back after the bow. This is a bit of a giveaway, but, and then we have the tenor sing Nessun Dorma, which is, you know, perhaps now the most famous piece he ever wrote, ever since Pavarotti made it so popular.
That is wonderful. Some exciting, exciting choices that you've come up with. I love this. And I kind of want to turn to, you know, the upcoming performance on May 31st. So about 24 days away at time of recording, you're opening everything off with Puccini's Celebration on Friday and Saturday, May 31st and June 1st. So with us being a few weeks away, what has it been like developing these performances?
Well, to be honest, this is a replica of a concert I did in 2008, which was the 150th birthday anniversary of Puccini. So we had, and Puccini's my favorite composer. I'm not going to, you know, make any bones about that. And personally, I'm the only stage director in history to have directed every opera he wrote, including certain versions of his operas, the three versions of Madame Butterfly, for example. So I'm very devoted to Puccini and his work. And when we celebrated his 150th birthday, we also, we kept the chorus parts had been copied and the orchestra parts had been excerpted, et cetera, et cetera. So I felt that this was, again, another occasion to celebrate this amazing composer. So it was pretty, it was harder in 2008 than it is now, to be honest.
That is amazing. I love it. Congratulations on being able to helm that title too. That's very impressive.
Thanks. Yeah, it took a while, but I got it.
So with these performances, with kind of marking the 100th death anniversary of this great composer, is there a message or a thought you're hoping the audiences will take away from the piece?
Well, what I hope it'll do is get them to eventually buy a ticket to the opera somewhere, whether it's us or anybody else, that they'll sit there and they'll go, because we do have people, especially in the park performances, because they're free to the public, and we get thousands, between 5,000 and 7,000 people come to these performances. And for many of them, it's their first operatic experience. And so this music is all ravishingly beautiful and extremely popular, or most of it they've heard before. And what I hope is that people will walk away going, you know what? I want to go to the opera again if they have been before, or I want to go to the opera and see something in a theater, because the visceral feeling of these voices and of this music with an orchestra and chorus is something that is very hard to duplicate, and it's unusual. Now in the park, we do have to amplify everything in the park because it's outdoors and it's so vast, but indoors we don't amplify, and so it's an unusual experience for people to be in a theater and hear acoustic voices and an acoustic orchestra, as opposed to everything coming through 25 speakers surrounding you, as it is on Broadway today, for example. Everything's overamplified, in my opinion. Just, if I can say that and not, have everybody on Broadway hate me, but it is overamplified.
That is amazing. I love the wide, the bigger idea you're hoping to invite audiences to do. Again, see opera. And we have such a wealth of that here in this city. So I love that idea. And I want to snowball off of that into our final question for this first part, which would be, who do you hope have access to these Bryant Park Picnic performances?
Well, anybody. And what's wonderful about Bryant Park is that it's truly in the center, almost literally in the center of the city. And we get people, it's a destination for people for our performances. They come, they get there early, they get there for the sound check sometimes. They're very, very excited, and they're faithful, and they return every single time. And then you have people that are just happen to be walking down the street and hear the music and wander into the park be able to have this experience. It's a great gift that Bryant Park gives to the city of New York. And so we'll get people from all over the world who just happen to be either wandering through the park or wandering down the street that'll come in. And we get people who are devoted to our programming and to the New York City Opera. And this is our, I think it's 8 years that we've been there now in the summer with programming. And it's frankly, it's the important, it's maybe more important than anything we do. We were founded by Mayor LaGuardia as the People's Opera. So to bring opera to the people free of charge in the literal center of Manhattan in a beautiful setting, it's a gift for us, and it's a gift to New York and the people of New York and or the visitors to New York.
Love that. Love that.
It really is fantastic. You're one of the institutions of our city that's created for its people, for truly its people, not just the few. So that's so wonderful.
I mean, and in that vein, Joe Papp founded the public theater, but based on the same model, frankly.
And it was, I mean, I'm sure you all had some backlash as well because, with Joe Papp, it was like money, but we need the money. And he was like, no, we need the art. We need to be a place where we can create art and spread that art and inspiration to the next generation, which is so important. If we want any of our performing arts to continue, we have to tap into the next generation and inspire them.
100%. I mean, we also do student performances, and we go into schools and try and get these children, interested in the art form. And it's a very different world now than when I grew up. I mean, I grew up on Long Island in a very special, school that had a tremendous performing arts program. But we would take field trips about once a month to the city, and we would go to Broadway shows, and we would go to the opera, we'd go to the symphony, we'd go to the ballet. And it was, I mean, if you were in the chorus or the orchestra or the theater department, whatever it was, I mean, it was open to the entire school, but in particular, the people that were involved in the performing arts were given these opportunities. And I mean, I saw the original production of A Little Night Music, a month after it opened, for example, and we're on a field trip. I mean, it's just, and we would go to City Opera, and the Met would have performances, and it was, and they don't have that anymore now, much less the amount of music education. And I like to think of, opera goers, they're hard to opera goers, opera lovers, and then ultimately opera donors. I think of as tomato plants. Tomato plants are difficult, right? You got to get the seedling, and you got to plant it, and then you got to feed it, and then you got to hope that there's enough sun, and you got to hope that there's enough water, but not too much water. But and then it grows. And then it grows and it starts to keel over. So you got to put a stake in the ground, and you got to hold it up for a while. And then you got to feed it, and you got to deal with it, and you've got to nurture it. And but sooner or later, if you take good care of it, it will yield incredible fruit. And that's what it takes to get, you get an opera, just grab somebody at 42 years old and throw them into an opera house and expect them to love it. Now, they may or they may not. Or they may just say, okay, this is nice, and maybe I'll come back again next year. And then after 4 years, maybe I'll write them a check at the end of the year for $1,000. But to develop them into major donors and major lovers and people that will subscribe, or at the very least just buy individual tickets, it takes work, and it takes a lot of time and energy and focus. But in the end, that's what you get. And we need to do that with younger audiences. And I think that that's why we get a lot of families in Bryant Park when they come. And you see little kids there, and you know they like it because they're quiet. And,
shifting things for the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I would love to start by asking you our favorite first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
Well, my favorite composer is Puccini, and my favorite opera is Tosca. It has been a touch point of my career forever. I got inspired at a very early age by Enrico Caruso. And that happened because I grew up in an Italian-speaking household, and we always had Italian music playing, but never opera. But I was always told that the greatest singer was Caruso. And so I got a book out of the library. I like to tell people that I owe the Great Neck Public Library about $350,000 in late charges from this book that I took out and never returned, you know. So there's probably a warrant out for my arrest somewhere on Long Island, you know. And it was called Caruso's Life in Pictures and was written by a man named Francis Robinson. And I was, you know, 7 or 8 years old, and I could, and it was mostly pictures. And I could read, and it was not very, you know, difficult to read. And I was fascinated, and I asked to be taken to the opera. And I went, you know, my family embraced that, and they took me, and that was it. You know, I mean, opera, and then, and musical theater, and, well, and all theater, frankly, and the symphony, which I enjoy very much. I've never been a big ballet fan, I have to admit. I always wait for them. When is somebody going to start singing? You know what I mean? Like, okay, you've got costumes, you've got an orchestra, you've got all these people, you've got a story. Say something, you know what I mean? But that's just me. I understand. I have a great respect for the ballet, but it's definitely not my thing. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I think the greatest piece of music to come out of the United Kingdom is Side Two of Abbey Road. So, you know, I have a broad taste. But, you know, seeing certain shows and certain opera productions when I was young, you know, inspired me to want to be in this business. And then I had an amazing music teacher in high school, and she was the one. You know, this is I don't know how much time you have, but I stopped going to gym after ninth grade, which was junior high. In those days, there was junior high school and senior high school. When I went to high school in 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, I never went to gym, just never. You know, I didn't want to go. It was, you know, all these jocks, and you got sweaty, and it was, you know, and I would much rather hang out, you know, smoke cigarettes and chase the girls in the soprano section. So when I got, and this woman recognized that I loved opera and could do certain things, and they would, when I got caught finally, and they weren't going to even let me graduate because I hadn't gone to gym for all these years, she went with me to the principal's office, and she said, "You don't understand. He's very different. He's a prodigy. He's different from everybody else. He doesn't need to go to gym. Gym is not important. The theater is what's important to him. And he never misses, you know, a rehearsal." So, you know, and it really did, in many ways, it changed my life.
Wow, that is amazing. First of all, some wonderful names on that list. I love that. Second of all, I wish I had a teacher like that when I was in school, because I feel the same way. Well, kind of rolling off of that, because I'm very interested to know, what is your favorite part about working in the performing arts?
God, that's a hard question. I suppose it's the when you stand in the back of the house and a performance is coming together, and the audience appreciates it and applauds. There's just not a better feeling than that, you know. But I mean, I like the process very much. But when you get it right and the audience gets it, there is, you know, you can't. It's very hard to explain. It's a rush that, you know, and you just get this great feeling of satisfaction. Like, you know what, I was honest. I took care of this piece. I honored the creators. I didn't make the performers look stupid. You know, everything came together, and then at the end of the day, the public loved it, or liked it at least, or even if they didn't like it, they appreciated it, which happens a lot. There are, you know, I've produced things that, and I've seen things, and I just go, you know, this was tremendously well done. I did not like it, but boy, was this what, you know, the craft was so evident that you could, you got to tip your hat, you know, and just say, you know what, it's not my thing, but boy, was this good, you know?
I love those as well. That is a fantastic answer. Thank you for that. And now we've arrived at my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory? Or, I mean, we are talking opera, so definitely opera is in that boat as well.
Well, I have amazing theater memories. I was really fortunate. I grew up in Great Neck, Long Island, which is like 20 miles from, Manhattan. And so I was able to, and I grew up at a, I'm 64. It's not a secret. So when I was a teenager in the 70s, it was a very, very rich time for things going on. I told you, I saw the original Little Night Music. When I saw the original Evita, I almost dropped dead. I mean, it was first of all, I fell in love with Patti LuPone, and I fell in love with Harold Prince, and sometimes you see things and go, I'm never going to be that good. And other times you say, I want to be that good, and therefore it inspires you to, move on and try and do something. There are operatic performances, Renata Scotto's Madame Butterfly was something that, made me cry. Several Renata Scotto performances, several Franco Corelli, singing, looking like a movie star and singing like God, and making, and it makes me, I've always thought. And whenever I teach, which is not a lot because I don't like to teach because I tend to be honest, and I'd rather let somebody else tell them that they should perhaps think about a career in plumbing, than me. So, but I do tell young singers they should listen to dead or at the very least retired singers. Because there's a great deal to glean from the past. I listen to old musicals and you listen to, Alfred Drake and you just go, this guy would be an opera star today. Yet he was on Broadway, in an unamplified theater singing, what he was singing, and are many of the great musicals of the past. And then, of course, like anybody of my generation, I'm a bit of a Sondheim freak, and I got to meet him a couple of times. I he left me a voicemail once and I kept it forever. And then, when I produced Candide, I got Hal Prince to direct it. And working with Hal Prince was an amazing moment in my life, and we had a very good relationship, and he actually put me in his book, his second memoir, which was extraordinary to be reading Harold Prince's memoir, and then he writes a paragraph about me. Jesus, I mean, like at one time also, I remember the phone rings, and we did the New York premiere of Angels in America, the opera, and the phone rings, and he goes, Michael, yeah, it's Hal. I said, hi, what's up? He goes, Joel Grey wants to go see your show and it's sold out. He can't get a ticket. I said, well, no, Hal, he can get a ticket. I promise you. He goes, all right, I'm going to give him your number. He's going to call you in 5 minutes. Click. And then 5 minutes later, ring, ring, ring. Hello, Mr. Capasso. This is Joel Grey. I said, yes. I said, absolutely. There'll be comps for you at the box office. I said, please come to the Patron Lounge and intermission. It would be an honor to have you there and everything. And I hung up the phone and I honestly said, if I die now, it's okay. I mean, it really, I mean, when I was a kid going to see Little Night Music, directed by Hal Prince, or Cabaret with Joel Grey, yeah, directed by Harold Prince. And and then you grow up and you get to a point in your life where that happens to you. It was overwhelming. So those are memories that I cherish and I'll never forget,
I mean, those are amazing memories. Oh my gosh, what amazing memories. Thank you so much for sharing those. As we wrap up, I would love to know, are there any other productions or projects that you or the New York City Opera have coming in the pipeline we might be able to plug for you?
Well, our second production in the park this year is a staged production of Tosca, the opera, fully staged, scenery, costumes, dressers. So, yay! And that's our second production. That's the 23rd and 24th of August, I believe. And then we're actually doing a production up in Art Park in July, which is way up in Lewiston, New York, which City Opera used to go there in the 80s regularly, and they just are starting to reintroduce opera to the area again, instead of Beach Boys tribute concerts and things like that, which they've been doing a lot of over the years. And then we have our fall season, and then we're in Lithuania. I mean, that's the biggest thing is this Lithuanian project, which goes on. And then we have Christmas in Bryant Park and various things. I mean, we're and then there's one really exciting project that if I'm trying to get funded, I can't announce because it's not funded, but maybe it will be soon. I can hope.
Yes. So a nice little hook to keep us lured in to stay on top of everything you're doing, which is a great lead in to my final question, which of course is if our listeners would like more information about the New York City Opera or about their Bryant Park picnic performances or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so?
Do it all through nycopera.com, which is our website, and there's a contact button as well on the website, which you can, get. It'll eventually get to me 100%. And Bryant Park has their website as well. And just keep your eyes open for, I mean, we get written about a lot in, especially in the trade papers like Playbill and whatnot. There are people that are show people tend to have alerts, that come in all the time. And then there's Opera News and Opera Wire and various things. But just go to our website or go to Bryant Park's website and stay in touch. And you could join our mailing list. And if you join our mailing list, you'll get information on a regular basis. And that'll keep you involved. And then we'll ask you for money at the end of the year. You may not give it, you may not be able to give it, but we're going to ask anyway.
Yes. Well, wonderful. Well,
Yeah.
Michael, thank you so much for
Oh,
taking
come on, Andrew.
the
This was fun. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I love that you've got this platform, and I really wish you great success.
time. Thank you
And
so much.
because it's important. It's important that people have a can hear about certain things and hear about them in a little more detail.
Yes.
And because sometimes it's enlightening. They're like, oh, you know what? I never really thought of that.
Yes. My guest today has been the general director of the New York City Opera, Michael Capasso, who joined us to talk about the New York City Opera's Bryant Park picnic performances. They're happening on various dates throughout the summer at 7 p.m. at Bryant Park. You can get more information by visiting bryantpark.org/picnics. And we also have some contact information for our guests and the organization that we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you come out and join us. Summertime in New York, I know it can be just unbearable during the days with the heat and humidity. But in those evenings, it's just so beautiful and lovely. And what a beautiful backdrop to have Midtown in the background in Bryant Park and hearing this beautiful music. So come out and join us for the New York City Opera's Bryant Park picnic performances. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
It's If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.